Come on, come on, while we're young.
What's going on?
Is the music playing? Do we?
No, what? You start dry.
Why do we start dry?
Well, because I do everything in post. I mean, so yes, the music is playing right now. You just don't
miss.
It's just not being fed to your headphones.
I usually hear it.
Oh. No, not for this.
Yeah,
why wouldn't we
cold.
Play the music on Saturday?
Turn my headphones up.
We do. I just put it in post.
Okay.
Because I have to do everything in post because it's the best of.
Just start like, hey, it's the best of.
But it seems like we would be able to add the music and there'll be no need to add it afterwards.
Why don't I have sound?
Well, we could, but originally.
Just saying. It's not like we have to edit the front of the show. I think we should edit this, but.
Well, no, believe me,
we should leave this in.
It's going to be left in. I'm very anti-post, but everything's post with best of.
Well, then roll
why
some,
the music? It doesn't make
music.
Any sense. I can't talk with it.
You have
I can't
insanity
it.
In my
ear. Wants Gloria.
No, Gloria.
Really? You want Gloria?
Laura Branigan.
No.
We should call her.
Because we need to extend the insult to Saturday.
Who is the artist, besides Laura Branigan, well, maybe this Laura Branigan, that you would eliminate, if you could eliminate one artist from the world of music?
Ooh. It's got to be bigger than Laura Branigan.
I know.
She's kind of harmless.
I would have said Helen Reddy, kind of.
Yeah, there was a
back
time.
In the time, but
yeah, she's
it evolves over time.
I guess maybe because they're top of mind, Kiss. I wouldn't mind Kiss disappearing. Although Gene provides lots of entertainment.
He does. They've taken up a lot of time.
I didn't need to have
Bieber in my life.
Oh, that's a great
Bieber's
one.
A good one, yeah. That's good. I know, I'm so sick of reading about him and the stupid Baldwin. And did you hear what Alec Baldwin, did we talk about Alec Baldwin?
No.
He said, they didn't listen to anyone, they went and got married. And they,
Alec Baldwin.
They didn't get married. But the part that killed me was, like, Alec Baldwin would listen to anyone about getting married if he wanted to get married.
I know.
It's not even his daughter, is it?
No, it's his niece.
What the fuck is he talking about?
Justin Bieber, all the ladies love Justin Bieber, Justin Bieber, Justin Bieber.
There's your intro music.
There's music for you.
Justin Bieber.
It was Justin Bieber.
Beautiful and oh so cute, they love Justin Bieber.
I certainly wouldn't eliminate Matt Farley.
Say, ooh la la, I love that Justin
no.
Bieber. I've got Justin Bieber fever. I
can't stop thinking about
Justin. It is weird watching the evolution of Justin Bieber. To me, it's been stupid at every moment of evolution. Like there's dumb baby, baby, baby,
baby.
And then there's the egg throwing.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, who takes girls' cell phones when they come to his late night parties.
Drives the car too fast because it's expensive and he wants to show off.
He's drag racing.
I know who I'd eliminate. I'd eliminate Michael Jackson. Seriously.
Wow. That would save a lot of time.
Even though he provided a lot of entertainment both to laugh at and listen to.
We'd have no eulogy for the show, though.
That's right, yeah.
You'd have one measurement of time would be missing.
True. Oh, boy. I take it back.
Sparkly. And splendidly bright. Here one day, gone one night, gone too soon.
Jordy would be $25 million poorer.
Oh,
45 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
For 45
Jordan
minutes.
Chandler.
Yeah, for 45 minutes, about 45 minutes.
Well, I'm just thinking along the lines of he was a pretty bad person. It'd be nice to eliminate bad people.
He
like
had his
that.
Flaws. He did. Phil Spector?
Yeah, that's
Lana well, Clarkson will be alive.
Yeah. But, man, he
just
put
a thought.
R. Kelly.
Ah, now
here we
talking.
Go. Now we can all agree. Yeah. R. Kelly.
Trapped in the closet. We wouldn't have to put
this
up with
is
that.
Kelly.
Yeah.
The best of, by the way, is brought to you by Realtor Scott Kunath of Coldwell Banker Weir Manuel. We were saying Manuel again yesterday when we couldn't remember.
Were?
Yeah.
I know.
To see what your home is worth or help in finding a new one, call 248-797-7746. You can text or call 248-797-7746 or email at skunath, SKUNNATH, at CBWM.com.
Real estate agent, real estate agent.
I just knew that.
Got this great new jingle for him.
Brought that right up. Wow.
He's gotten a lot of calls agent. Since we got this jingle.
The deal for the buyer and the seller. Real estate agent works so hard.
The cool version.
Putting a sign up in the yard.
I love the background singer.
Real estate agent will never ever fail.
Ooh,
He does have a new client from the show. Zach!
Oh, cool.
Agent working so hard trying to broker a deal. Looking for a buyer, looking for a seller. Working so hard trying to find a price that both sides can agree on. It's so hard. You put a sign.
Real estate. Oh, yeah. I start the best of show on a very sad note. We were going to call the 88-year-old Gloria, who was assaulted and carjacked by this asshole couple. And we have come to the conclusion that an 88-year-old blocked us!
Yes.
The first time, this has got to be telephone history, being blocked by an 88-year-old.
Yes, it's all your fault.
Even the prince couldn't block you.
Nah. Oh, that's true.
The prince's block.
Just
but...
for singing G-L-O-R-I-A Gloria?
Yes.
Blocked?
Yes.
That's bullshit. Should have been flattered.
Flipped her out.
And it has totally changed our opinion of her.
I was thinking...
Which really isn't fair, but...
That maybe she deserved to be carjacked for a minute, but I'm over it. No, I know. That was over the top.
Somebody said something about bruising the rest of her face.
Oh,
that was over the top. That was a moment of rage. I sort of know how the guy felt, but... I would never do that. I don't endorse it.
Not.
But I was angry. I was talking. I was out of my head. What can I say?
It's hard to control rage like that.
It is.
Being blocked by
block
an 88
us.
Girl.
What the? Can we try the number again and just hope that we can rewind back to when we felt bad for Gloria and we just want to talk to her and make sure she's okay?
Yeah, we can try her. Unfortunately, when you block somebody, it'll still ring, but then it drops out and gives you that busy sign. So
I just even with a jitterbug? It does that?
I don't know. Is there something I should do that's... Oh, I'll try something.
What?
Oh, you could disguise our number.
What are you up to?
Oh. Well.
Ha, sneak
in. Rand's going to win a tech war with an 88-year-old.
Woo!
How exciting is that?
You better win. If you don't...
Outsmarted by Gloria.
Boy, he's really putting himself out there now. What if he loses this tech war with the 88-year-old?
Uh-oh.
Turn the light down.
She likes this version. Good job, Brandon.
She sounded like the guy yelling, Scott, for a second.
She did. It's like good singing. Gloria,
Oh, Brandon lost. Oh. Outsmarted by an 88-year-old.
I wasn't outsmarted. Technology just didn't work out.
But you don't have some move to make here?
Unfortunately, no. Well,
like calling her from one of the iPhones?
Yeah,
can we hook one of the iPhones up?
Yeah, we could. Yeah, we could. You want to?
Can you hook it up? Yeah.
We should wait until we finish the intro here, calling like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I got to get a piece of equipment. We can do
it. Okay, go for it.
All right.
And while you're gone, I will mention, I said this yesterday when Eli came in, if there's one advertiser, you can, if you have a choice to help one advertiser, please make it Starlink. And we're trying to make this account work, and it's just not going quite as well as I wished it was. But Starlink and our friend over there, Jimmy D, who you can call. Wait, isn't the phone number in here?
855-567-STAR.
Okay. I was about to say, I don't think there's enough numbers there. 855-567-STAR to call Jimmy D.
567-STAR.
And maybe look at the 2019 MKC. XNAFLAN customers get even more remarkable savings, and conquest buyers save thousands on the Continental, America's foremost luxury sedan. The Nautilus comes standard with safety extras that otherwise cost thousands, like 22-way adjustable seats, blind spot monitoring, which is really cool, by the way, lane-centering technology for continuous steering support when you're texting and stuff.
Sure.
And driving.
The car has to correct for you. It does, actually. That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and put your phone on the console, and it'll charge it up.
Yep, set it right there. It charges wirelessly. So they're already appearing. The 2019 MKC is just days away to debut the long-anticipated luxury crossover, the 2019 Lincoln Nautilus.
Sweet.
So anyway, just putting the bug in your ear that...
Do you want to try her?
Could use some help
with
Lincoln.
The phone's ringing off the hook, though, so now she's probably
freaking, you know what I'll do? Out. I'll complete. Was there anything?
Phone lines are going crazy.
At Gloria's house. Oh boy.
Oh, here we go.
Is this from the iPhone?
Yeah. It's up. But I don't know if she'll be. We'll be able to hear her. I don't know if she'll be able to hear us.
Oh.
Well, we'll figure it out. I mean, it's just best of.
Hello.
What do you mean it's just best what? Of?
The worst part is I can't play Gloria.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm using the same input.
Gloria.
Thank God.
Who's on the phone?
Oh, God. That
oh, it says user busy.
That intro is so annoying. She's wailing on
She's
us.
She's blocked everyone.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, Gloria.
Wait, what? Does she think she knows how to block her phone?
What is it? Gloria 3 podcast.
Fuck. This is really a low, low point.
Yeah.
Gloria have a Facebook?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, no, she is 82.
Yeah, she's blocking phone calls.
Genius.
Beating the shit out of Brandon.
She's in the right age demo for Facebook, isn't she?
Look at that bruise on Brandon's forehead. Oh, my God. Worse than Gloria's.
Worse than Gloria's.
How could this happen? I mean, blowing my mind. We can't even get her on a strange iPhone. What, did she block the world? Does she know we're calling? Does she have surveillance on us?
Anything from 248's been blocked.
Mine's a 586.
Well, if you want to get faced by Gloria again.
Let's try her after I take care of Scott Kunith.
Hey, didn't we do Scott?
No, that was just the 10-second one. Oh. Not more than 10 seconds, but...
Do we actually have any content?
No.
Not really.
Play this song.
Whether you're selling your home or buying your first home, it should not be a stressful situation. With 26 years of advertising and sales experience, realtor Scott Kunith can say the biggest contributor to stress is the lack of communications. Here's what he'll do. Call you back in a timely manner. If you prefer to text, he's fine with that. Keep you informed through every step of the buying or selling process. If he doesn't know the answer, he'll get it. Real estate agent. His word is his guarantee. So call, text, or email realtor Scott Kunith of Coldwell Banker Weir Manual. Coldwell Banker Weir Manual to see what your home is worth or help finding a new one. 248-797-7746. 248-797-7746. That's S. Kunith at CBWM.com. S. Kunith, KUSKUNNATH at CBWM.com. Real estate agent. Are we trying Gloria from another phone?
Yeah.
I could try her from the 810. Trying to
find a deal. We're trying her from three different area codes, and she's wailing on all of them. What kind of a command center does she have over there?
I don't know. Here, try this one, Mark.
Oh, you want me? Okay.
Yeah.
This is outrageous.
Hang on. I gotta unplug. Every time you hear that, it's me unplugging.
Yeah.
Coming up on the best of, by the way, there was a Florida cruise ship crash.
Near crash.
Well, you'll hear all about it. We don't need to set it up. There's lots of setup. And then there's the infamous judge with the staph infection.
Oof. Oh, yeah. When we first found out about her.
Gross.
She was going to spread it all over the courtroom, too.
Ugh. She's the big un.
Rob Walchek gets credit for turning us on to that story. Oof. He didn't put her in the Hall of Shame, though. I don't know why. Was he afraid of her because she was a judge? She was bigger than him, too.
Is she still leeching on public property?
Yes, probably.
Damn it.
And Fox 2 was trying to interview her, and she called the cops. She's out of control.
Okay, she's defeated us in every area code.
I give up.
Damn. And then there's the David Letterman book.
There is a possibility that Brandon just had the wrong number all along.
No. She picked up. We heard it. We heard that shit.
I think there was a meek hello. That's a big fake out to anyone calling, so they don't know about the command center, or they just never figure it out.
You know what I think? I think that we should have made the phone call the day that we first saw this story, because I found the number then and I forgot to bring it back around. We should have made the call then, because I think she's getting too many calls. She's tired. She needs
That's
rest.
True. We were late to the party.
She
I think
looked
you're
pretty.
Right.
I don't know, active.
She looked pretty spry.
Cantankerous and
she was
stuff.
Really psyched to talk
She's
about killing
hot.
The son of a bitch.
She's got
to
be hopped up on painkillers with that bruise.
Probably.
Ooh, right.
The Letterman book, now that's the author. Is that the interview with the author?
Yes, yeah. Jason Zinnemann?
Sounds right to me. Doesn't matter.
Awesome. We don't know who he is. Nobody knows him. We'll never talk to him again.
It was awesome. That's a great book, too.
It's a good book. It was really good. So enjoy the best of Drew and Mike one more time.
You see this dude down in Florida? The cruise ship that was coming at his house?
No, I saw the tease for an Inside Edition.
My only question is, what does this guy think he's going to do? A cruise ship is coming at his house, and he runs towards it.
He's saying, stop. Turn around.
He's trying to stop a cruise ship that's coming at his deck.
Why is it coming at his house?
I don't know.
Did the wind blow it there?
A little close to her, like the guy in Italy. Remember?
Get out! My man, get out! Bill Todd Hunter and his wife Yasmin ran to their deck screaming when the Equinox appeared to be heading straight for them.
I looked up and all I could see was the bow of the ship towering over the house.
So why are you running the other way?
Pause for a second. Do you know the bow from the stern? I never know which one to say.
No, not at all.
I think he was showing off a little bit by saying he saw the bow. Because it doesn't really matter which end is coming. It's coming at your house.
No. Don't you find it odd that he's running at it like he's waving his arms like they can see him and just hit the brakes?
So I yelled at
the there's
port
a guy
side.
There. Stop.
Yeah. I saw the dock and the house. I didn't mind running into that, but now there's a human being there that's telling me to stop. I'm going to stop.
Stop it.
And you're about to see why. Here's ABC's Eva Pilgrim.
I do want to know.
Tonight, caught on tape, a cruise ship's
look at all the people on their balconies with their phones filming it.
Home. Bill Todd Hunter and his wife Yasmin ran to their deck screaming when the Equinox appeared to be heading straight for them.
Fine, I looked my up, man.
And all I could see was the bow of the ship towering over the house. So I knew something
show
was
off.
Wrong.
Bill Todd.
That's when I really was panicking.
Bill
and
Todd
I was worried that the house was going to get hit.
Here, you can see the ship throwing its thrusters into reverse, roughly 100 feet away. This isn't the first cruise ship close encounter.
Well, that has nothing to do with this story.
Water caused another celebrity cruise ship to slam into this dock in Alaska. In this incident, the Pilots Association says the ship was directed to this route because of strong winds, but the pilot was skillfully keeping it within the channel, then proceeded to safely guide the vessel out to sea.
Yeah, they've come close, but not literally facing and pointing right at a home 100 feet offshore.
David, Celebrity Cruise Line says no one was in danger and the ship did not run aground. If it had, they would be required to report it. David?
Eva, thank you. When we come
What a non-story.
Was that, what I'm wondering about that ship was, does that ship get on wheels and roll into houses? I mean, can it do that? Because this house isn't right on the water. It's a ways back.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It would probably just take out,
take its deck out, I guess. Or, you know, his pier, I should say. But, I mean, he acts like that thing was going to hit his house.
I felt like I expected him to see him take a broomstick, like he was going to push the boat back out of the water.
Want to call him?
Yes. What does he think he's doing? What a non...
Because I thought ships stopped when they hit ground, then they can't go any further because they're on the ground.
Pretty much. What does he think he's going to do?
Push it out with a broomstick.
Didn't you see him doing that? And then falling in. What a non-story. Honestly, the story should be about that captain and how good he maneuvers that ship.
Couldn't they hold a sign up that said, we were about to reverse thrusters, as she said? Did she
your
just...
call has been forwarded to an
oh, come on, Bill.
Pussy.
Bill Todd Hunter.
He's out there looking for boats.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or
throw
press 1
in there about
for more
starboard
options.
Port.
Yeah, Bill, this is we're calling from a program, radio program in Michigan, and we saw the bow of the boat that was about to hit your house, and we saw you waving it away and all that, and all the excitement there, and we just want to know if we could talk to you for a few minutes. Maybe there's something we could learn about this on our program. People are very concerned, naturally, when ships come that close to taking a house out. Jay, you want to just leave the number on the...
If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message.
Let's
press
2 let's hear it again. Let's listen to it.
Re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press 4.
Let's just press 4.
No, let's hear it. Let's hear it. It's always fun.
To send your message with normal delivery, press 1.
Okay, no.
To send your message with urgent delivery,
what?
Press 2.
Wait.
Bitch.
I want to listen to it.
You've pressed an incorrect key. To send your message with normal delivery, press 1.
Have you ever used a phone before?
To send your message with urgent delivery, press 2.
All right, well, this is clearly urgent.
Thank you. Your message has been sent. Goodbye.
No number, no
lady.
Number.
Bye-bye.
They would have played it back for us, wouldn't they? Was it one of those deals?
I thought so.
Sounded like it.
Let me call him back.
Jay needs a special dialing wand.
I just think it's fun to hear a message over again.
To hear how stupid you sound? Don't you always sound dumb in messages when you leave them?
Depends on the message. Usually, it seems like when we're leaving messages, there's an effort to sound dumb.
Let's try again.
Oh, he's listening to the message.
Hey.
Oh, cool.
Maybe he'll call back.
I love that.
Oh, he doesn't have the number. That's right.
He's getting mad.
He's got caller ID, I bet.
He's so mad at the phone right now.
He's getting mad at his own dialing efforts.
Really angry.
Maybe he'll answer.
The guy's a technological wizard, but he can't use a fucking phone.
You hear me refer to the... Bill heard me refer to the bow, so I think he wants to talk ships with me.
Well, did you see the way the port side was swinging into his house? That aft was out of control.
What's the aft?
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Wait, it's the bow and the stern, isn't it?
Yeah, so what's the aft?
I have no idea.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Yeah, so sorry I got cut off there before I got a chance to leave you the phone number, because we did want to hopefully to discuss this fairly soon. It seems to be pretty heavy in the news cycle. The number is, hopefully it's on your caller ID anyway. Just want to make sure you got it.
Can't believe that, Captain. What an aft hole. Get it? Aft hole?
little boat humor for you. Thanks so much. Good job, by the way, waving that thing off. Good thing you were home. Thanks so much again.
Bye-bye.
What, you don't know how to hang up?
Message review.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so sorry.
I don't want to hear my bad
joke. Before I got a chance to leave you the phone number, we did want to hopefully discuss this fairly soon. It seems to be pretty heavy in the news cycle. The number is, hopefully it's on your caller ID anyway. Just want to make sure you got it.
Can't believe that, Captain. What an aft hole. Get it? Aft hole?
little boat humor for you. Thanks so much. Good job, by the way, waving that thing off.
Waving that home. Thing off.
Thanks so much again.
Bye-bye.
You are satisfied with your message.
I'm satisfied.
Press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase.
Thanks for the bad joke support. That was
a little joking.
What is the aft, Brandon? Did you look it up? The stern?
No, it's like, I don't know. It's like
the middle of the boat?
Anything astern of the Z-axis midline of the vessel.
Whoa.
So it's the middle of the boat?
It's heavy.
Can you just Google parts of a boat?
What's the part? Wait.
I'm going to Google parts of a boat.
What's the part where the captain is?
The bridge.
The bridge. Yeah, the bridge. It's always exciting when they call someone to the bridge.
I've been on the bridge of a cruise ship.
Really?
Yeah, it was sweet. It was awesome. I'm rock over it still.
Somewhere in Scientology, by the way, I was reading about, it might have been Miss Cavage, but I think it was somebody else reporting to the bridge where LRH was. L. Ron Hubbard.
The stern is the rear section.
Stem of course. Stem to stern.
Well, what the hell is the aft?
Fore and aft.
Yeah, forward.
Same thing. They just call them different things.
Oh, aft is an afternoon? Hey. Is in the end? Later?
Oh
later
God,
in the day?
Stupid.
How clever.
We've got Mr. Bill from down in Fort Lauderdale. Hang on a second.
Oh, really? The Todd Hunter?
Yeah, he called back in.
Did he like?
Oh, no way.
I wonder if he liked my joke. Can we find out that first?
We'll get back to Tom's top 10.
Bill, are you there?
I'm here. I'm speaking.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm glad you seem to stave off of some pretty serious situation there.
Yeah, I guess so. The way the channel built, it would never hit the house, but...
Oh, it wouldn't hit the house because it looked like the house was close enough that maybe, I don't know, it seemed like it was plausible. Awful big ship.
Awful big ship, but it would have to cut through a lot of sand and stuff to get to the house.
Yeah, I've just seen when they do go aground, they always get a lot further than I would ever imagine, and so I didn't know how close your house was.
We're about 100 feet away, so maybe you're right. Yeah.
Would it have gotten a deck, or certainly would have taken your dock out and all that, right?
Luckily, we don't have a dock. That's what I tell my wife. I just bought her a new cruise ship for a present. They were trying to dock it at the deck.
So how did you like the aft hole joke? Did you appreciate that little boating humor?
I didn't hear that one. Sorry,
I get to deliver it again.
Yeah.
I said that captain was a real aft hole.
Hey,
I like it.
Hey,
oh, well, you can use that. You have my permission.
I don't know how valuable or usable that'll be for you, but
you know,
feel
what's
free.
You know what's amazing is usually like in serious times, they say 90% of people will run away from danger, but you're one of the few 10% that actually ran towards the danger. That's really admirable.
Well, I raised my arms and said, "What the fuck?" I said, "Dude, what the fuck?" And then I put my hands on my hips, and one of my friends called it, my bitch wings were out.
Did you see the captain on the bridge, and he just put up a hand like, "Oh, sorry about that"?
No, I didn't see the captain. That thing is 7 stories tall, and he was close enough that the angle wouldn't allow me to see the captain.
How close was he? You were right at the edge of the water. How close was he to you?
Within 100 feet.
100 feet?
Yeah.
Why would that ship ever get that close to... I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense to us either. That's what we're trying to figure out. They said that high winds and strong currents pushed it to the edge of the shipping channel. Well, if it was to the edge of the shipping channel, it would be pointing directly at my neighbor's house and would not have had to back up and go back into the channel for it to go out to sea. It was sort of funny because when it fully backed into the channel, he shut off his thrusters, shut off the engines for a second before he put it into forward. And I yelled, "Somebody's going to get fired." And the entire the people on the deck heard me and were starting to applaud.
Wow.
How many people on the ship were filming with their own cameras?
I don't know. I was just more or less just watching this, the mud and all the silt start churning up from the thrusters because I really thought he touched bottom.
Oh, wow. Really? Wow, what an ore deal. Get it? Ore?
O-A-R deal? Jeez, Mark.
You can use that one, too.
He's hot tonight.
Yeah, Mark is he's in the Ambrosia Room later on tonight. I'm gonna check him out. The veal's good, I understand. Anyway, so if how deep was the water at 100 feet?
I don't know. I know it drops off rather quickly, just the way that the channel has been built. I know from my own boating experiences there, it's about. It all of a sudden goes from like 25, 30 feet to 6 feet of water just because there's a big shelf there. I did a little bit of research. That ship draws 8 meters of water. So there's 25 to 26 feet of ship below the waterline. And that's why I was concerned that it actually touched bottom.
Well, how could he possibly know? I mean, having done a little boating in my time as well, and knowing the closer you get into shore, you just don't know, how many deadheads or whatever might be underneath you or how deep it is at every level. He couldn't possibly have known exactly how deep it was. It just seemed completely reckless to me to even be anywhere near you. I mean, is there any doubt about that?
No, no doubt about it. Especially, like I said, the way the angle of the ship was pointing, he definitely, come in. I look at it, say he came in too hot to the corner, couldn't make the turn, and finally either touched bottom or decided he better stop before he did hit bottom, put it into reverse, and get back into the channel.
How nerve-wracking. Your stomach must have been in knots.
I think it was more my wife than me.
Mark, you're not even a boating guy.
What are you talking about?
Well, got some nice coverage.
I'm a little slow tonight.
That's okay. No, you went through something that had to be pretty horrifying. You made it on Inside Edition, though. That had to be kind of fun.
Yeah, Inside Edition called. They're gonna do an interview tomorrow. ABC World News had it on tonight. So,
wow, you're really in the big leagues.
I'm sucking up my 15 minutes of fame, and it's not leagues. Due to a lottery victory.
Hey, you know, enjoy every minute of it.
It's really amazing ABC News did a story on you, considering the story really is boat sails off into sea. I mean, it really did. I mean, there was no, nothing happened.
No, nothing really happened.
But when a 7-story ship is 100
but nothing
feet,
happened.
When it's 100 feet from your house, though, I mean, that had to be an incredible visual. When did you realize this thing was getting close? How close was it when you first saw it?
I was bringing in the trash from the street. I just come home from work. And you know, I came into the house, looked at it. It was a normal departure. And when I started to wheel the trash cans up, I looked up and I could see the bow of the boat just towering over the house. Oh, it was just—it looked like it was coming straight at it. It was just an incredible sight. So I just dropped the garbage, ran back, and then that's when I entered into the video where, you know, I raised my arms up and say "WTF."
Well, if this captain doesn't get in trouble, he might get a lot of peer pressure from his fellow captains.
P-E-E-R, of course.
Yeah, I got that one. Yeah.
Well, with your face all over TV, you might be someday you might be a superstar board. I don't know. That one didn't really work.
I seriously doubt that.
You got to recraft that one, Mark.
After the ordeal, did you go inside and just sit down and relax with a nice glass of port?
No, maybe a glass of Chardonnay.
They're getting worse by the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, we better get out of here before it really gets bad. Hey, listen, thanks for the time. It was really what a video to see that giant ship so close to the shore. It looked absolutely insane, and it was definitely something. You're gonna need a couple glasses to get over that one. But thanks so much for the time. We appreciate your calling back. Enjoy the 15 minutes.
My pleasure.
Okay, thanks again.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay,
see you.
Bye bye.
Is there an appropriate goodbye for, like, if you were on a boat?
Ahoy?
No, that means that's hello, isn't it? Ahoy?
Yeah.
That's how people used to answer the phone.
I just thought of another one.
Did we find that out? That people answer the phone ahoy at first?
Yeah, Mr. Burns used to answer that way. Ahoy, ahoy. I thought of another one, too. Can we call him back and use this joke on him? That captain
first.
Certainly wasn't playing with a full deck.
Oh, hey. Jeez.
Fucking bad. I apologize, yet I don't apologize.
Crank up the Hall of Shame.
Oh, yeah. How often do we see stories about public servants that piss you off? This might be the worst one.
Being a judge is hard work, and one local politician campaigned hard to win a seat on the bench.
But now that she's a judge, she isn't working hard. She isn't working at all. Problem solver Rob Wolchek has the evidence.
They've done so many of these stories.
She isn't working, but she's collecting a six-figure salary of our taxpayer money. Can you really call in sick to a job you've never even worked a day at?
This is a 36th District Court in Detroit. It's the busiest court in the
Wait
state.
Till you see this
there
piece
are 30 judges here, and 29 of them sit on the bench every day hearing cases. But one judge has never sat on the bench, never heard a case. Her name is Kalilia Yvette Davis.
How come you haven't been on the bench yet?
Because, excuse me, I had a surgery. I have a wound infection and an open wound. So if you want staff infection all over the courthouse, you might want that.
She isn't going to court to work because
open wound.
She's going to give staff affection all over the court.
Wow.
What a dope. And by the way, she's what, 700, 800 pounds?
Yeah, she's pretty huge.
How come you haven't been on the bench yet?
Because, excuse me, I had a surgery. I have a wound infection and an open wound. So if you want staff infection,
rub it all over Rob.
Courthouse, you might.
I'm
Kalilia Davis, running for 36th District Court Judge.
Kalilia Davis billed herself as a successful attorney when she campaigned last year. She appeared on faith-based programs urging people to vote for her, admitting she'd had health problems in the past that
still
Jesus
does.
Had healed.
Jesus is my doctor.
This is a judge.
Who voted for this loser?
Whoever's in the 36th
her
District.
Her faith-based message must have worked.
I will sit there during a trial and pray.
Because in November, she won a seat on the bench.
I need you to pray over this whole courthouse. I need you to pray for the prosecutor. I need you to pray for the judge.
And people are praying for the judge.
Okay.
Praying that she finally shows up to work. Earn some of her $138,000 a year salary. In December, Kalilia Davis was sworn in, but the new judge asked the court if she could take the start of her term off so she could take a trip to Germany. Chief Judge Nancy Blount denied the vacation request. Then Kalilia Davis informed the chief judge she'd had surgery and wouldn't be able to attend court.
Interesting.
And even though there's a docket full of cases for her to hear every day, Judge Davis has never showed up to hear a single one. We watched the judge on days when she had court cases.
How she could take vacation if she
time of her life,
had surgery?
Well, it's a lie. She just didn't want to work. She wanted to take a vacation as soon as she started work. Who does that?
What would you say you do here?
She moves around really well, then.
Oh, yeah, she manages.
Out, going to Sam's Club. Going to the credit union.
Oh.
The gym. Mm.
One
day we were surprised to follow her to the 36th
Jaywalking
Courthouse. Was she actually going to take the bench? Nope. She went in for a few minutes and came out. Oh. The date, February 15th. Payday.
Oh.
And while the judge is collecting a nice salary of our taxpayer money, I found out the judge herself hasn't exactly been the model of a fine tax-paying citizen. The federal government has placed a $35,000 tax lien on Kalilia Davis, and she was late paying her Wayne County property tax, and now she's a Wayne County judge. And while Judge Davis has yet to sit on the bench in 36 days.
By the way, Rob keeps showing this picture of her after she was sworn in, where she's got this big smile on her face. She's wearing this gigantic judicial robe, and she's holding the biggest cake in the world. That's just congratulations on it. You just picture that she's going to devour it in about 2 seconds.
Oh, she will. I'm sure she did.
But Rob keeps showing this still picture, and every time I just laugh.
Court. She has appeared in 36th District Court as a defendant. Just last summer, she was sued by Ally Financial for $16,000. She lost and was slapped with a judgment. Huh. And according to the very court she's supposed to be a judge at, she hasn't paid a dime. She was sued and lost in 2015 in 36th District Court as well. And while campaigning, she claimed she'd been a successful attorney for 9 years. But I guess not successful enough to avoid filing for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2012. So last week I waited outside of her house, holding a Fox 2 microphone along with my cameraman. Check. And there she goes.
She drives by her own house.
And not stopping. A few minutes later, two policemen came.
What?
They said someone had placed a 911
call. Good use of the police. Resource,
I wasn't
right?
Doing anything wrong,
a 911
so
call.
Yeah.
This
finally,
fucking
after watching
bitch.
The judge circle us for about an hour, she stops.
Hi there, Judge Davis. Rob Walchick from Fox 2. Can I ask you some questions? How come you haven't been on the bench yet?
Because, excuse me, I had a surgery. I have a wound infection and an open wound.
A wound infection.
Staff infection all over the courthouse. You might.
Yeah, when are you going to be back?
Why are they
that
still
reminds
putting,
me. The staff infection all over the court reminds me. I'm about to lose my bowels all over myself. Remember that drop?
Yes, so yeah.
All over.
Excuse me. I had a surgery. I have a wound infection and an open wound. So if you want staff infection all over the courthouse, you might.
That threat?
Yeah, apparently.
Well, why are they still putting things on your docket?
Oof.
If you're, when are you out? Until.
Look at those legs.
Until my doctor has said, so you should probably ask Judge Nancy Blount.
Well, I will do that. Why don't you talk to me for a little bit and fill me in a little bit? You are an elected official now. What's that?
I need to get off my leg.
Well, we can come in and talk to you. I mean,
no,
you are an elected.
And you can also get off my property.
I'm not on your property. I'm on the sidewalk.
A few days ago, Judge Davis came here to Fox 2 and spoke with me off camera. She told me Chief Judge Nancy Blount was involved in retaliatory harassment of her.
Oh, interesting.
Davis defeated her step-grandson in the election. Interesting, but she showed me nothing that appeared to support that theory.
What she did show me were letters from the chief judge requesting more documentation on her medical condition.
Judge Blount gave me this written statement. As chief judge of the 36th District Court, I am required to monitor judicial attendance. Judge Kalilia Davis was elected to our court in November of 2016, and her term began on January 1st, 2017. I do not have a satisfactory statement from her doctor as to why she has been unable to work. The documentation is requested from any judge who will be absent.
Well, then,
from
what's
the court
the penalty for not showing up?
Of time.
Great question.
Any lengthy absence creates a
frankly,
hardship.
Frankly, she should have to pay back all this money
and the public.
Why is
so,
she being paid?
Judge
what the
Davis
fuck?
The chief judge is out to get her.
I don't know.
And feels as though she's provided enough evidence to support that she's too sick to work. The chief judge says that's baloney. She says she's only met Judge Davis once and is just asking for reasonable documentation that she's too sick to take the bench.
So, do you think she has medical problems, real medical problems
yeah, she's
that are
huge.
Preventing her from sitting on the bench?
Well, she showed me proof
she doesn't
that
have to
she
stand behind
been hospitalized.
It.
And but it's not me that she needs to prove this to. She needs to prove it to the court. And she
Hugh looks pissed, by the way. He's just staring at Rob.
Coming with the court as to
what she has and getting the proper doctor's notes and that type of thing. And remember, this is a lady who, when she was elected, the first thing she asked for was a week off so that she could take a vacation while they were having their judges orientation.
How's she healthy enough to take vacation?
And then the next thing you know, she's sick. So certainly it's been very unusual that she has never showed up to work at all.
Has the chief judge set a deadline?
That I don't know. You know, I mean,
deadline. Waiting to find
out. Can you believe that?
She hasn't shown up once.
She goes on vacation. Isn't she going to get everybody on the plane infected?
Yeah. She didn't get staff infection all over the plane.
Wait, she went to Costco and Myers or whatever.
She allegedly went to work out.
No, she didn't go work out. She can work out, she can go to fucking work. Fat slob.
Totally. And you know
what a load.
You know she spent the weekend trying to find a doctor that'll write a note for her.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she'll come up with something. But, you know, I'm sorry. What is that? Why is it that with public officials, once you're elected, there's just no way when you don't perform your job to get rid of you or to fire you or to dock your pay or whatever? They always, everything is always in their favor.
Because they make the laws.
Well,
they make it hard.
Why don't they make the laws a little tougher on themselves? All they do is embarrass themselves when some load like this comes along. By the way, this is about the fifth judge Fox 2 has trailed around for a while to find out that they're fucking off and not showing up. And they've got dockets to the ceiling.
Yeah,
remember that judge kept showing up at like 11:30 and would leave at 3 o'clock every day. And there's people waiting and waiting and waiting in court. Whatever happened to that idiot? Probably nothing.
We always wonder why does it take so long to get a hearing? Why does it take so long?
Yeah, but
suspension. How do people keep their jobs pulling shit like that?
Yeah, I know.
That's ridiculous.
Here's the other thing, too. How hard is it really that hard to be a judge?
No. You sit there all day.
You judge. It's like it's the easiest thing in the world.
Oh, God. And all this prayer not bullshit.
To mention, not to mention she's had liens. She's lost cases in the court that she's supposed to oversee.
If a judge does not follow the law and is not paying off judgments, then how can they be a judge? That's ridiculous.
You would think that would be a prerequisite to be a judge.
I could
not have any.
Of course.
Although, you know, anybody can sue anybody.
Every time you see these stories, like the Sports Authentics guy, judgment, judgment, mm-hmm. judgment, 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 doesn't pay, doesn't pay, doesn't pay, doesn't pay. Why can you just not pay off judgments and just continue to go about your business like it's no big deal? Why is that?
When there's a
judgment, it seems to me your wages ought to be garnished, or you certainly should be able to continue doing what you're doing
mm-hmm.
when you've got judgment. Oh, God.
Can you believe this piece of shit?
Hell,
I hope
these people gaming the system over and over, and somebody from a judge's chair doing it?
I hope Rob stays on this story.
This stupid, fat-ass liar. Jesus.
She is huge.
I mean, nothing.
No wonder she had to sit down. She walked up 3 steps.
She certainly has a lot going for her, doesn't she?
I've never seen someone struggle as much going up 3 steps.
Oh, her legs are like tree trunks.
Yeah. No, I did notice this giant bandage around one. So
yeah.
She does have an
infection.
It must
be her open wound.
Ew, right there. Well, that's 2 open wounds in the same area.
Yes. I was thinking that the entire time.
Gross.
One that cannot be treated. Okay, it's almost time for Jason Zinnemann. The last giant of late night.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I still haven't fully finished the book, but it's a really fun read. I mean, I don't know, it's the kind of show I could read all day about, and I did for many days.
I tried to get this book on Kindle, and they said you couldn't get it until tomorrow. Did you get an advance?
Yeah, we got an advance copy. We did. I know a lot of people were asking about that. I got ooed a lot.
Mark got an advance copy?
Yeah, that I left at home. Ooh.
I know. Trudy, you probably would have read Mark's advance copy.
I know.
Like Mark.
And leave it at home.
It looks really good, though.
It is. You can take mine if you want to read it.
Yeah. You got to read the rest.
It's really a fun read.
Yeah.
I wonder if he saw him on Friday at the Roker Hole.
I would think so. He's got to be a huge fan, right? I mean, it's the first book about Letterman.
He was pretty funny on that.
Still has that beard.
Great.
The Pearl Jam thing.
What did you think of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Awards? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Pretty good year, I think.
Yeah, it's a really good year.
They didn't have any Steve Miller incidents. Everybody was sort of kept it together.
The Steve Perry thing was so weird.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he just didn't want to sing. But they wanted him to. I mean, the band's out there playing Separate Ways, waiting for the vocalist to come out. The crowd's chanting for Steve Perry, and he won't come out.
What's wrong with him then? Is he
phobic now? I have a feeling he's out of singing shape, is my guess, and he didn't want to embarrass himself. Because I can't imagine why else wouldn't he do it? The band wanted him to.
It's your moment in the sun. Wow.
I know, it's weird. But he did sing. The one time he sang was with that nobody band in Minneapolis when he was screwing around.
The Eels, yeah.
And did he sing a Journey song? One Journey song, maybe?
Oh, God, I don't know. Thing? I remember.
Well, maybe he figures that, you know, he's better than everybody else in that crappy little band, so it's going to make him look better by contrast.
I don't, yeah. Well, that's kind of what I wondered. Was he doing that because it was a small crowd? He wanted to kind of test his mettle a little bit?
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like.
Lenny Kravitz tribute to Prince, though. Wow.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I thought it was the best tribute I've seen. Because everyone tried to do it straight. Mm-hmm. And I think by mixing it up and doing it different, I think it was the right way to go.
Yeah.
And let's see if we have Jason Zinnemann on the line. Jason?
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Really good. We got Drew and Mark and Trudy.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, yeah, thanks for coming on.
I enjoyed the book. Spent a lot of time. I haven't fully finished it, but God, I was such a Letterman fan, I couldn't help but dig in. And, you know, the first thing that I thought was really interesting was you got so far back with Dave, back to college radio, back to the game show pilot he did, the weather he was doing for the talk show he did, the midday talk show he did in Indianapolis. Did you get to listen to tapes of that stuff?
I did, actually. Some of my favorite bits of research were kind of unearthing some of his early radio, which he did both at sort of local Indiana stations and on a college radio station. There's still some of it floating around. I mean, I didn't hear a whole ton of it, but I heard some of it, and some of it's also online. Like, you could find his him performing or him doing a radio show at in a dorm, Wagner Hall.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, with a woman who would become his first wife, playing a character, which I read about in the book. And that stuff is fascinating because I mean, what I sort of discovered is I think a lot of people talk about his doing the weather, mm-hmm. but he did become kind of a local celebrity through that gig. But I think people forget Letterman's family didn't have a TV when he was born. His first love was radio, and a lot of the people he looked up to as a kid were radio stars. And his start in broadcasting was in radio, and so a lot of the I think the key to understanding what he does well has to do with radio.
Could you hear the talent in that early radio stuff? He's so much younger, but you did quote some rather irreverent moments he had that were funny, I thought. But, I mean, was Dave coming through then? Because a lot of guys really struggle to find themselves, I know, when you start out in radio.
It's a kind of amazing how similar he sounds.
Like, really?
I mean, he had a certain confidence and a certain facility with language and extemporaneous storytelling that was there from the start. But and he had that kind of like he had a more pronounced kind of like anchorman voice, you know, like
okay.
But actually there's one clip which is the one exception. Again, you could find it online. It's if you look at Wagner Hall, in that one, this is after he lost his job at the college radio station. He was fired.
Which has to be the lamest college radio station I've ever heard of. They didn't play rock and roll music in 1968. What the hell was that?
Their playlist was what?
Crap.
That just shows you how long ago this was. I mean, the crazy thing is Letterman came of age, you know, in the heart of the culture wars in the 60s. I mean, this is late 60s when campuses are just burning up and, you know, playing rock music was a political act in some ways. And, so he kept basically lying on air, making stuff up, and pissing off the powers that be. And by the way, I say in the book that the benign lie is like a quintessential Letterman joke. If you look at just the speech he gave introducing Pearl Jam at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just yesterday, 2 days ago, mm-hmm.
He does the same joke. I mean, the same joke. I mean, he makes so much. He says, like, he has a great bit where he says, you know, Ticketmaster is a bunch of weasels, and Pearl Jam fought back, and now no live music show anywhere in this country costs any money, right?
Yeah, all tickets are free, exactly.
Yeah, all tickets are free, whatever. I botched the joke. But basically, that's so quintessentially Letterman, because it's both a sort of, like, you know, made-up story, a made-up news story, which is what he was doing on radio in the 60s. And also, it begins with this kind of, like, righteous political point, which is, like, immediately undercut and made fun of. So, anyways, but to answer your question, yeah, he after getting fired from his first radio station, he worked for this station, which did play rock music, in this all-male dorm. And he's in doing it in this style of radio called Boss Radio.
Oh, no.
That was, oof. Do you know that?
Yes. Big voices.
Exactly. You guys would know, because you're in the it was all the rage then. Yeah. And what's fascinating is Letterman goes from making fun of these stodgy classical music guys, and then when he finally gets a place that lets him play rock, what does he do? He immediately makes fun of, like, the rock and roll DJ kind of voices. And that's sort of, you know, that's who he is. He makes fun of whatever world he inhabits. So in that clip, you hear a slightly different kind of Letterman, because he has this kind of rat-a-tat-tat style of delivery that doesn't sound like him so much.
Well, you know, in Los Angeles, he's doing stand-up, and he has different things that kind of come and go, but he does get the pilot for a game show. And you made it sound like he did the same thing there. He made fun of the game, and while the pilot failed and the show didn't go anywhere, that sort of raised his stock, because people, you know, agencies saw that and said, this guy's really got something. So that really raised his stock, didn't it?
Yeah, it was incredible. It's incredible. That's also on YouTube, which is just, like, it's hilarious. I mean, you've never seen anything like it. I mean, he comes in and just sabotages the whole thing from the inside. You know, he's just, because you're used to, also, you have to, I guess, the context, maybe it won't read so much now, but the context is, you know, game shows were this peppy, high energy, all smiles, kind of, you know, brightly, bright colors. And when you walk on the stage, it looks like every other one of those game shows. It's got the same aesthetic, everything. And then he comes in and he immediately starts making fun of everybody, and including himself. And, you know, the show didn't get picked up, but the producer of it, Bob Stewart, who is a legend in the game show world, you know, he did Pyramid and many, many other very successful game shows, was the first producer of the morning show.
Wow.
And then when he gets to late night, he kind of does the same thing. He makes fun of the whole
NBC
TV genre in general.
The genre, yeah.
Like, not
exactly.
Just that.
He deconstructs the talk show and essentially is putting on a talk show that makes fun of talk shows as much as a talk show.
Well, the thing about Dave that I noticed, and I'd thought about this before, but it really, I mean, you really stretched the point, was how important women were. He said he never would have made it out to L.A. if it wasn't for his first wife. Meryl Marco is so gigantic in The Late Show. I mean, she's just humongous. It seems that Dave likes having a female sort of a co-conspirator, if you will.
Completely right. I mean, that was one of the main kind of structural, you know, ideas that I had for the book, was that, you know, Dave's relationship with these, you know, strong relationship with you know, his girlfriend or wife is the backbone of his whole life. You know, he has, as you say, Michelle Cook really was key in giving him the strength to take the biggest risk in his life to date, which was going to L.A. And then and he worked with her. Like, you know, he, as I said, Michelle Cook was on that Wagner Hall tape, although she didn't do much work with him. And then, of course, Meryl Marco, who's, you know, everyone who worked on that show, including Letterman, will say she's as critical as anyone in creating the aesthetic for late night. You know, she made You Were Mail, she came up with Stupid Petricks, the remotes were all edited by her. And then his wife, his current wife, also worked on the show. Mm-hmm. So you have this intermingling of, you know, his romantic life and his work life throughout, which, you know, is one thing that when I started working on this book, it was really, I really didn't start writing a biography. I started writing a book about his NBC years, his work. And what I discovered is it's impossible, because impossible to do without going into his personal life. Because the talk show, a talk show host isn't an actor. You know, a talk show host comes out and is speaking right to the camera. He's, the viewer sees the talk show host as himself or herself.
So you
couldn't ignore who he was and do the book justice. So then it got bigger and bigger and became, you know, became more of a biography.
Well, to that point, and the point with him about women, you know, most of the book is about late night. You do spend time on The Late Show and his change, and you admit that he gets a little, like, creepier, like a creepier old man. And I don't know if he'd even admit that. What do you think that was about? And it leads up to the whole blackmail threat and the
interview. He did, actually. You know, I asked him about that. I said, you know, a lot of, in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, and even a little bit longer, one kind of common joke was this kind of flirtatious, leering joke with women. You know, even with guests, that was often the go-to. And he said, you know, he said that was just like a, you know, I think he said it was laziness to some degree, but I think he also said it was like an old stock joke, you know. And I think, you know, when I watched some of the shows that he was influenced by the kids, there was a guy that he watched as a kid, Paul Dixon. It wasn't an old stock joke. It's sort of, you find a lot of laughs for that. But it did, I think, particularly because, you know, his relationship with guests were so interesting and so occasionally antagonistic. People were scared to go on Letterman show. I mean, that was one thing I learned doing the research. In the 80s, you know, in Hollywood, people were terrified about, because they thought he would be, you know, he would make them look bad. He would mock them. He would cut them down. It's why Cher called him an asshole on the show. And, you know, I talk about this. David Foster Wallace wrote this short story from the point of view of a female guest. And it sort of almost reads like a horror movie, just how scared they were.
There's another happy guy, David Foster
Wallace. Yeah, exactly.
Great
writer. But
they also prepared for the show, though. A lot of people said they thought about being on there weeks in advance. You know, what am I going to do? Or more the male guests, I would say, the comedian types. But some of the interesting things about the show itself, you know, as I got further into the book, was it seemed like it was kind of a cross-pollination between, I didn't realize Dave and Howard Stern were as close as they seemed to be. And I was thinking about Dave having his own kind of whack pack with Larry Bud Melman and Sira Jewell and Mujibar and Rupert and Meg Parsant, not really wacky, but just, I don't know, didn't Dave sort of in his own way, didn't call it a whack pack, but he was sort of working on the same themes as Stern was.
Yeah, completely. I think, you know, it's funny, when in the morning show started, the producer said he wanted Letterman to have a family in the same way that the guy who was very famous on radio and TV in the middle century, Arthur Godfrey, did. He had a singer and another, and it was a horrible idea, and it didn't work. But he basically recreated a family, and all those people you mentioned, Paul and Biff and Morty and Barbara Gaines, and you know, these people, Chris Elliott, obviously, this kind of regular cast of characters that he could play off of. And you know, we forget how radical it was for Letterman to use the backstage and the people who work on the show as much as he did. That was really something new. And you know, one thing that stands out is both Rob Burnett and Steve O'Donnell, who both were head writers of the show, said something to me. They both said that Letterman is best in reaction. Mm-hmm. And so I think that family of performers was particularly useful for him because he had something to react against.
Well, and surprising him, too. He's so good when he's surprised. And you talked about one thing that I thought was so funny, made me laugh out loud, was they had him interviewing people coming out of the elevator, which seems so silly. But if you said David Letterman was doing it, I would immediately think, well, that'll be really funny. And then, what do you know, the elevator doors open, and there's the giant doorknob that had been in so many jokes before. And Dave was pissed about it, but I thought, oh, that's hilarious. But he didn't like being surprised, but he performed well when he was surprised.
You're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. There is this interesting incongruity between what Dave was really good at and what he thought he was really good at. I think you're not the only person who thought he was really good. He's a spectacular ad-libber. Mm-hmm. You know, really, really good on the fly, incredibly quick. I mean, if you look at his interviews with your brother Theodore or something, he knows exactly when to respond. And yet, what I was really shocked to learn that he hated surprises, and he wanted everything to be planned out. So And on the morning show in the first year on late night, he occasionally his staff would surprise him with something, and he would do great stuff. I mean, in the morning show, I talk about this one episode where they locked the door when he had supposed to come out and be like, David Letterman, and he can't get the door. And Hal Gurney set up a camera backstage, like the original Skycam, to see Letterman try to get in and start to panic. And he didn't know what was going on. And I mean, this would never have happened on The Late Show.
No.
I mean, or even Late Night, probably. But that the story you tell that I put in the book about the giant doorknob in the elevator, somebody cited that was a turning point.
Oh, wow.
That was when they weren't going to do that kind of surprise.
Oh, it's such a shame.
Regarding those Whack Packers, did he ever burn out on one of them? Was there one he just wanted to be done with, maybe Harvey Pekar or any of them, or did he just keep wanting to bring them back?
He did burn out on them.
Yeah.
I think he burned out on all of them at some point. you could tell, like, there's people like, I mean, certainly Harvey Pekar. There's one interview with Harvey Pekar where Letterman loses his cool. It might be the only time in 33 history where he really, Pekar's really pushing his buttons, and he goes after him, and he says, and he's talking about, I think, like, some labor issues, and Letterman's like, you and your little, he refers to his, like, little, comic book. And it's an example, I think he knew he made a mistake right when he said it. But for a while he was on, but then he brought him back. But, Sandra Bernhardt, for example, was a spectacular guest.
She was gone.
And she was gone for a while. Crispin Glover. Yeah, she came back once. I think people would go in and out of fashion.
Meg Parsant, I know that bit sort of lost its luster when it became more planned. Everybody knew what was going on. But it was something Dave was really proud of. He said something to the fact that, of all the things we did, what other show would have ever done something like that? He really, and that was the girl across in the building across the street that they sort of spied. And he thought, oh, God, I'd like to get a hold of it. I wonder what she's doing over there. And then eventually became this relationship. And it was a great bit. And she was fantastic.
I loved it too, but that was a moment that I was surprised that he said that. I mean, that he was, I think I forgot his exact words, but he said if there's one thing from the show to take, that we did, I forgot what the rest of the sentence was, but he singled that bit out. And I thought about that a lot. Why does Letterman like that bit so much? And it is true that you can't imagine anybody else doing that.
No, you can't. And also, somebody in the building across, a total fluke that they turned into this thing that ran for, a good length of time. I mean, that was sort of what Dave did so well that I think maybe he lost sight of later on, like the jokes about the jokes, the running jokes, the Oscar thing. He joked so much about what a bad host he was in the Oscars that it's gone down in history that was the worst hosting. I mean, that it was a debacle, but really it wasn't a debacle. In the days afterwards, there wasn't much bad said about it. No.
It's really, that's one thing that I'm really proud of in the book is that it always bugged me that people always pinned the, Letterman being eclipsed in the ratings because of the Oscars and the reputation for that show. Because I remember seeing it and thinking it was hilarious, actually. I thought it was, and then since then, we've seen some truly terrible Oscar hosting. And nobody seems to get. Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking actually of Franco and
that was
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. And none of these people. There's like a couple days where people make fun of them or say it's bad. But Letterman was people went on for years, and I have this theory that Letterman's own jokes about the Oscars helped create this reputation. That was it. And so I dug up every single joke that he ever told in the monologue about the Oscars. And they go for literally years, like 3-4 days and longer. And this is after many Oscars. And what you see is, in the first, couple weeks and months after the Oscars, the jokes that he did kind of a bad job, but not that bad. Then, like, 6 months later, the joke is like it was a failure. And then, like, a year later, 2 years later, he said, it's like a genocide. It was a great example of Letterman's relentless self-deprecation and his, which is really the source of a lot of his greatness, also causing a problem for himself.
Yeah, he changed history, essentially. I thought something you pointed out in the book that was maybe the biggest mistake Dave made, and I don't know if you guys got to talk about this at all, but was the O.J. Simpson trial. He completely avoided it, and when Stern was on, Stern said something about O.J., and he said, well, I don't think double murders are really funny. But there was a million funny things within that trial that wouldn't necessarily have to make fun of the victims, and I'm sure Dave knew that. But insight as to why he avoided that completely? Because I thought that maybe that might have hurt him in terms of ratings.
There are a lot of people, I believe, a lot of people agree with you, including some on the show. Why, I don't know. I tend to take him at his word on that. I mean, I think the interesting thing about Letterman is Letterman can seem like somebody who, is always making fun of everything, and he's very ironic and all this. But there is a core sense of decency to Letterman and a kind of gravitas about him. There were things that he wouldn't joke about. For example, one writer told me, I think it was Jerry Mulligan, that he submitted a joke on Letterman about like a murder or assassination. And he said, no, this is the best case. And he said, well, we would make a joke about the Kennedy assassination. And Letterman's response was, of course we wouldn't make a joke about the Kennedy assassination. Mm. And that took this guy aback. But it's like, that seems like ancient history. But
yeah, 50 years. I mean,
yeah. Mm. And people are always talking about the Kennedys. I mean, it's like, but there were things that he felt firmly were in bad taste. And, Letterman,
Well, that Jason, that Midwestern sensibility, which I'm proud to say I have, maybe there's something to that, because Johnny Carson, David Letterman, it does seem that Midwest does serve as sort of a good, a good place to grow up in terms of having the right sensibility for a show like that. And those things did seem to serve him well. I just disagree with him about O.J. Simpson. That thing was so big, it seems like he had to address it in one way or another, and he really didn't. And Jay went crazy with it. That seems like it was around the time Jay sort of merged ahead of Dave. So I don't know.
The dancing Edos.
Oh, yeah.
I never thought it was funny, though. I never thought anything Jay did was that great, but at least he was sort of going with the zeitgeist, which Dave usually did so well.
I mean, people, I guess they got reminded with this documentary last year, but as you point out, I mean, O.J. was the biggest story for the longest period of time. That not
still
joking
is.
About it. It still is. You're right. You're right. Still is. I mean, the Dave Chappelle special is all organized around O.J. You're completely correct that not joking about him stood out.
After he left and went to CBS and launched that show, Conan is at late night doing his thing, not very well, kind of struggling, and Dave actually goes on his show, legitimizes it, Conan takes off. Has he done other shows? Would you be surprised to see him do any kind of late night show appearance, maybe with Colbert or Kimmel? Could you ever see him doing that?
I feel like I've guessed wrong a couple times, so I'm hesitant to guess what he's going to do next. Lately, my latest thought is that he seems really happy doing what he's doing right now. And now, what is he doing now?
Yeah.
Whatever he wants.
Nothing.
I originally, if you asked me like a month ago, I thought he would follow the Seinfeld model of doing like something on streaming that involves interviews or something like that. Now I kind of think he's going to follow more. And then again, this is just guesses and speculation. I have no evidence at all.
You're going to say Johnny?
No. I don't. Okay. I think it's clear he's not going to do Johnny because Johnny is, you never saw him hardly ever. The person who I think is Bill Murray.
Just popping up here and there?
Exactly. He's going to pop up in unexpected places, create like an event, and then disappear. And then do it like, a handful of times every year.
Well, going back to what we first talked about, the Hall of Fame appearance, he has to know how well received that was. That might light a fire under him.
I think he does. And he was great.
He was.
I mean, I could see him doing, he gives out an Oscar gives out the Best Picture Oscar. Yeah. He shows up for some, some live event in Daytona. I mean, I can see him doing a handful of that stuff. But on the other hand, I could also imagine what he does. He comes back and has a project he wants to do as well. I mean, he certainly seems in the recent interviews pretty at peace and happy.
You know, you talked about the final appearances, the final shows, which I loved. I probably watched the last 40 or 50 shows, every single one of them, and I just loved them all, and I was so sorry to see him go, although I got it. It was probably a good time to go because we miss him, and you don't want to stay too long. And he was certainly the oldest talk show host of that metal, that time period at the time with everybody else. With Jay gone, he was by far right. The oldest. So I understood how he felt. I was sorry at the same time. But I kept wondering, you know, when people like Norm Macdonald would say, you know, I know I'll never see you again, or, you know, a couple guys said that. And I wondered, God, are any of these guys who seem so close to him in terms of, you know, as guest friends, like, I don't know, Steve Martin, Martin Short, Bill Murray, you know, Pearl Jam, obviously it seems like there's a true friendship there. Is he friends with any of these people?
I think what I've heard is that in more recent years, he has developed friendships with people. He has, like, you know, Steve Martin told me that he, you know, had socialized with him and been at dinner parties with him. And, you know, I think he does hang out, has hung out with Bill Murray. I think for a long period of time, his social circle was very small. And a lot of those people who he sees, I felt the same way you did. Like, when I saw his last interview with Julia Roberts, I mean, I've been watching him talk to Julia Roberts for decades, and they seem like the closest of friends, or if not more. And she said, like, this is the last time I'm going to see you. And I was like, I thought, wow, that's that. And I think that, you know, that they were friends for this guest appearance. Now, maybe that's changed now. I really don't know.
Yeah, he seemed, I got the impression Julia Roberts really had a crush on him. I don't know if that was just for TV. I mean, I don't know how I could be so stupid to think that, but it seemed like it.
I think you were the only one. Yeah, you weren't the only one.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a few great, there were some actresses I thought that brought out the best. I mean, Terry Garr comes to mind. Mm-hmm. He was always great with Terry Garr. Dave was actually, you know, he really strong women who with a comedic touch who wouldn't necessarily be great with Johnny would work with Letterman. Sandra Bernhardt is another good example. Sandra Bernhardt is just a flamboyant, you know, unpredictable figure. You know,
he didn't like the unpredictableness.
He didn't, but he knew there was a time when he knew that it was creating great TV. And I think there was a time when she was in the same category as Stern, where Stern certainly pushed Letterman out of his comfort zone, but they knew he was good TV. And there was a time when that the same was true for Sandra Bernhardt.
Well, it's such a great subject. We could talk for hours about David Letterman and the David Letterman show. And I want to go back and listen to some of the tapes you're talking about on YouTube. You think the one from college, which one would be the most fun to listen to, say, for our purposes?
For his old radio stuff?
Yeah.
Our show. This thing at Wagner Hall. It's on a site called Open Source. So if you Google Wagner Hall, I think the name of the station is WAGO, WAGO. It actually only reached within the dorm.
Yeah, it sounds
it's an all-male dorm.
Wow.
So it's like 300 guys would listen to this. It was described to me as in a closet. Maybe you guys would understand. There's a technical term for this kind of station, which I forgot what it is. But anyway, that one I think is fascinating, particularly because you hear his first wife.
Hey, Jason, late night, those shows, who owns them? Will we ever see them in any kind of reruns again? I remember a couple networks used to rerun them in the late 90s.
This is a real great question and a shame, really. I wrote about in the Times. I wrote a profile of this guy who this kind of super fan who became essentially kind of like the unofficial archivist for the show, and who collected every single episode Letterman ever did except for two, at 6,000 film episodes. And
wow,
I leaned on him for this book a lot. I mean,
no
I saw, yeah, he and this guy to a large degree is responsible for keeping Letterman's legacy a lot, because a lot of journalists go to him. Yeah, even the show, people from the show came to this guy. And he lives in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I mean, there's one, there's this issue that NBC owns the late night. And then there's a kind of, I think there might be some, when I started, I went to the show and they showed me the tapes they had. And they were, at that point, a lot of them were on pretty decrepit three-quarter-inch film.
Oh, boy.
That was, I tried to get this antique machine to play it, and, you know, I looked into it. I mean, they've got some issues about archiving. It's very hard to see these shows, which is, it's infuriating, really. Because, you know, if you compare it to SNL or, you know, Seinfeld or The Simpsons, where these shows are constantly in syndication, and so new young people rediscover it, these early letters, which are spectacular, you know, you can find a lot of them on YouTube, but they can be forgotten quite easily because people don't see them. So
would you seem to be money in them?
Changing anytime soon. I wish I could have better news, but I don't.
Hey, I'm curious. How's the book done for you? I would think it'd be a smash because to read the first great book about David Letterman, I would just think everybody would want to read this book. But how have you done so far?
I hope you're right, but the book doesn't come out until tomorrow, so I have no idea.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got the advance. Well, we were so lucky to get the advance copy. Ooh, lucky us. Well, if we have anything to say about it, it'll do really well because we've talked a lot about it and had a lot of fun with it, and we sure appreciate your time, Jason. I hope it does great.
I had a great time. Sorry, it's great to talk to real fans like you guys, and I appreciate all the support.
Cool. We'll look forward to your next one.
Okay.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Jason. All right. Bye-bye. The Last Giant of Late Night by Jason Zinnemann.
Bye.
Pick it up tomorrow. And I just think he really nailed Letterman.